Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is DarkTap66, aka Joe. Welcome back. If you listen to our first episode, our primer to kind of introduce you to the channel, what we're trying to accomplish here. If you haven't, it's of course not needed to do it, but it kind of gives you an idea of what we're trying to do here. So the first episode is going to kind of be an introduction to Gwent. Again, this podcast is essentially made for people who have no experience with Gwent, who are incredibly new to it. This would not be for anyone who would be considered an advanced, mediocre, or pro player. I mean, this is really a from the ground up introduction to Gwent. So if you are been playing the game for a while, this probably won't pertain so much to you, but anyways, this is more of a diary journal of my experience with Gwent and trying to make it a little bit more accessible for people. I think card games, to name a few, like Hearthstone, Magic the Gathering, can sometimes be a little overwhelming for some players. So, of course, Hearthstone is the big game out there that most people are playing online and streaming. And, of course, there's Magic the Gathering, which has been around forever. It's a game I grew up on. It does have a footprint both with Arena and just Magic the Gathering Online. I will say Magic the Gathering, in terms of its platform on mobile and PC, is incredibly lackluster. I have a lot of issues with the game. That's why I don't play it, but this is not the podcast to talk about the issues with Magic the Gathering or the issues with Hearthstone. I would say, though, that Gwent, if we are comparing to a card game, would be the closest to a type of Hearthstone. But again, you know, if you don't know, Gwent, the Witcher card game, was originally in The Witcher 3. As I guess you could almost say like a side quest, side storyline. You start off, if you have not played The Witcher 3, one of the first places you visit is a tavern. Well, of course, I'm not going to ruin anything, but shortly thereafter, you will able to play Gwent. And throughout The Witcher 3, if you want to, you can battle, fight, whatever you want to call it, certain characters and NPCs throughout the game to collect better cards. Now, that game in The Witcher 3, it is different than the game you will play if you play Gwent, but it gives you an introduction, of course, to how the game is played. I think there's additional rows in The Witcher 3. There's all different sorts of differences with Gwent, but the premise is the same. There's three rounds, score the most points in two out of those three, essentially. So, again, Gwent, The Witcher card game, is a free game. It does not cost anything to play. It is available both on PC, Android, and iOS. I will be talking on an experience from both sides, so PC and Android. I actually got back into the game because the Android thing popped up on one of my feeds. I was a closed beta player, and why I didn't continue to play it, I'm not really too sure. But anyways, the mobile game brought me back. I think it's a great thing to have mobile. I have it on both iOS, Android, and PC. From my experiences, they both run the same on both Android and iOS. I am playing on a Pixel 4 XL, and I'm playing on an iPad. So, of course, the iPad experience is a little bit better, mainly just because of the screen size. Outside of that, they perform both pretty good. The controls are a little bit different, but again, you know, you're playing on a mobile device. It's not going to be as intuitive, of course, as playing on a PC. If you are playing on a PC, it does not require a high-end PC. Anything, you know, Intel Core i3, AMD A4 or higher, graphics card, you shouldn't need too much of anything. Of course, your visual effects will not be as good if you're not using a standard intro-level graphics card. But if you are someone who is using, say, something like a RX series, AMD graphics card or something in the 2050, 2060 realm, you're going to get some pretty nice visual effects, as there is 4K graphic packs that you can download for the game. Again, not required, but it does allow the game to look better than, of course, if you were playing on a lower-end graphics card. But again, not required for the game. It does play on mobile devices, which is a good sign. I don't know, experience around playing maybe on like a Pentium processor, like a dual core or something like that, you could probably still get away with it. But if you have additional questions, if you're using an entry-level computer, you can refer to the Gwent minimal system requirements to install. Anyways, so when you do install, you will install through the GOG.com installer, or GOG Galaxy. Again, I think these things are kind of driving me crazy. I got GOG Galaxy, I got Origin, I got Epic, I got Bethesda, I got Steam, I got Battle.net, aka whatever Blizzard calls it now. It's getting quite old, but anyways... yes, that's what you'll download it through. You can also, like I said, download the 4K pack if you are playing on a 4K monitor, or you just want the additional visual effects if you're playing on, like, let's say a 2K monitor. So if you want to review what I'm playing the game on, you can visit my Twitch channel at twitch.tv/darktemp66. I'm hoping that most of you came to this podcast from that channel, but I guess there's always a chance, right? My system specs are listed in that. If we are talking about generalization of system specs, I am playing on a higher-end PC. You know, it would be considered not top of the line, but pretty close to it, and trying to be cost-effective. You know, it's the whole chasing the dragon thing. It's not cost-effective, and it doesn't make sense. Anyway, I used to do that, but no. Anyways, yeah, so in booting the Witcher card game, it will essentially put you through a entry-level kind of tutorial on how the game works. I strongly recommend doing that. Once you get through that, the self-explanatory stuff, there's different ways you can play the Witcher card game. Now, there's the normal play style, which has three different things. There's a training mode to where you can kind of test out your skills, play against a quite ridiculous monster deck. There's a classic mode that can be played in both unranked and ranked. And then there's the seasonal mode where there'll be some changes to how the game works. So think of it like, you know, you get additional cards in your deck. All different sorts of things that will happen throughout the seasons. It's a fun little way to add to it. There is an arena mode, which if you're coming from Hearthstone, will be very familiar. You can pay a certain fee, $1.99, to play a round of 9 games. Or you can pay with in-game currency that you can acquire with playing the game, which we'll talk more about later. The arena game works a lot like a booster pack draft. If you are familiar with Magic the Gathering, think of it like you open a booster pack, let's say of 12 cards. You take the cards you want, you pass the next 11 over to the next person, so on and so forth. The arena kind of tests your ability to understand the mechanics of the game, how to pick the best value with cards, so it definitely levels the playing field in terms of what cards you have. Everyone's going to essentially start with the same amount of cards, just your ability to draft. I don't know if this is extremely popular in The Witcher. From having conversation with people who play the game, they say, I get a mix between Arena sucks, Arena stinks, and Arena's okay. I have not gotten a overwhelmingly positive vibe when it comes to Arena. I do like it. I learn a lot of cards, and I think that's the cool thing about Arena. It introduces you to a lot of mechanics, popular cards. You know, you'll see a, I guess you could say, a consistent card pick as you play Arena, which I think can be really great for you. And of course, how you finish in Arena will be affected on the results. The awards you get at the end of Arena. Again, can be paid with in-game currency or with actual money. We'll get more into the economy of the game and whether it's a pay-to-win game and things like that probably later on. This is more of an introduction. I would probably say if you're weary about Gwent and the pay-to-win, I can assure you this is not a pay-to-win game. There's arguments that Hearthstone and Magic the Gathering are. I have seen players become very successful without paying to win. But this game, very un-pay-to-win. They do start you out with a number of decks, pretty much with every faction. So you can kind of get an idea of how the decks work. The decks are extremely viable to progressing through the ladder to at least a basic to okay player. I mean, they're not going to bring you to pro level, in my opinion, but they will get you started. You will pretty much start with a number of different factions. You have Northern Realms. You have the Nilfgaard, the Skellige, the Monsters. There is a Syndicate, which is actually new. It's one of the newest ones. And you will actually get a Skoyatile. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but again, this is the introduction to the game, and it's late, and I'm having internet issues because I would be playing and streaming, but for some reason, my upload speed is very low. I don't know why, but again, let's not really get into that. Anyway, so yeah, they will start you off with a few decks to kind of go over the mechanics, how the game works, and things like that. Then you have what they call Journey. The way Journey works is there is a certain amount of time that you can complete the journey, and that is over a certain amount of weeks, days. Currently, as I'm looking right now, I'm at 58 days and 4 hours. With standard levels of 30. Now, as you progress through the journey, it unlocks things like avatars, titles, keys, all different sorts of things to progress you through the game, to look cooler, all that goodness. You can purchase premium, which, as you progress through the game, think of it like you'll just acquire more stuff. So, for instance, standard level 1, you acquire the Geralt of... you'll acquire the Geralt avatar, the Butcher of Blaviken, whatever you want to call him. If you have the premium package, you'll acquire his full body emote. The second level, you'll acquire 2 keys. If you have the premium package, you will acquire the alchemy border that goes around your player profile. So, don't have to have premium. But if you are playing the game religiously, if you enjoy the game, I actually strongly recommend premium. I think it's a little cool touch that you can collect more additional things. Now, you can fast travel through the standard and premium tiles by paying additional money. So I'm level 29, and if I pay almost 80 bucks, I can progress all the way to 100. So... is there a way to progress? Yeah, you can get some more cards, you can get some more kegs to open, you can get some more cool effects and things like that, but it's not required to play the game. It's really not. As you progress, your ability to learn how a deck plays is so much more important than the cards you acquire. So, I don't know if you know, like, I'm an IT tech. Without disclosing who I work for, we have a tool set program that essentially has all of these tools. And there was this fun little article that came out a few years ago where somebody pretty much said the only thing we use to fix people's computers is this one disk. And how dare we charge so much money per year to run this one disk? Well, as we all know, the tool chest does not make the mechanic. The ability for the mechanic to use his tools is what's important. You can go out and buy $2,000 to $3,000 to $4,000 pans. It's not going to make you a good chef. So again, you can buy all the cards you want. If you don't understand how to play the deck or how to play the game, it's not going to matter. It is a 2 out of 3 game. It is not a first round. So you have to understand what the coin's about, what passing's about, how to feel out your player through the game or your opponent. So there's a lot of cool things when it comes to that. So if you are coming from a card game, you'll kind of already have a head start. If you're not coming from a card game, then yes, you're going to want to learn some of those things. So then, of course, there's the deck builder. The deck builder gives you the option to view your cards. There are multiple different factions with the card. Like I said, there are six factions. Then, of course, there's a neutral, which that would just mean a card does not have a faction. So usually that's a whatever it may be, a tactic, an artifact, all the above. Everything has a crafting cost. So you'll start with common, rare, epic, and legendary. Of course, as it goes up, that card will be better. It will also cost more to make. Excuse me while I take a quick drink. I'm not going to cut that out because this is the starting of the channel. So our abilities are low, or our wanting to spend time to do it is not as high as I hope it will be eventually. So there are different card types. There are units. Those are cards that bring power value to the battlefield. There are specials. So after that card is played, it is sent to the graveyard. There are artifact cards, which play on the battlefield, but they don't have any power value. And there's the strategy cards. And those will start out with on your board, whether you flip red or blue, which you'll kind of understand as you play the game. So every card has a standard look, which is a static image. So that would be like if you had a playing card in your hand, like let's say the Queen of Spades. It's static, it doesn't move. And you can, what they do, transmute to make it a premium card, and that is essentially an effect that will play out on the card. One of the big things I have to say about this game is Gwent has some of the most gorgeous art in terms of how the cards look. And not even just in the static images, but the premium images that actually animate as they sit on your, I mean, they are gorgeous. I don't know of another game that has, they have a foot on everybody, let's just say that. And it's cool, as you right click on the card in your deck builder, it will actually show who does the illustration, which I think is a really cool effect. Then of course you have your card sets, and that will kind of go over the cards that are in the game. So if you play Magic the Gathering, you know there's a base set that comes out. Then of course there's expansions that come out. Your expansions, you have a starter set, which are non-premium cards that cannot be milled. That's kind of what you start out with. You have the base set, which come in the basic version of Gwent, and that's just from downloading it. You can mill those cards. We'll get into more about what milling is. Then you have the Thornbreaker cards, which can be gotten from either crafting or by unlocking the Thronebreaker starter. I'm sorry, the Thronebreaker expansion, which is a single player. Like I said, you don't have to purchase it. I have, but I haven't played it yet, sadly. You have the Crimson Curse, the Novigrad, Iron Judgment, and the newest one, which is Merchants of Ophir, which included, if I'm not mistaken, the new, I guess you could say, faction to the game, which what I'm hearing is the most difficult faction to play, but the highest pro player in terms of the best, the Syndicate Blood Money decks. So, again, I've downloaded the deck, I've tried to play it, I can't play it, I have no clue what I'm doing. So, again, it's not about the tools you have in your chest, it is about what you're able to do with those tools. So, looking at the deck, we'll pull up my first one, which is called a Death Shadow deck. This was introduced to me by Mr. Jupiter's Sakadura. I give him many props for being a great person to partner with to learn Gwent. He showed me some of the great players out there, people to pay attention to on Twitch, gaming like TLG, which is Team Leviathan Gaming, which they usually are at the very top of the pro player list on Gwent. So what I will tell you is the Gwent community is fantastic. It's top notch. You will learn as you play. So anyways, so Death Shadow was my first deck that I pulled from a source. So the way it works is you need to have at least 25 cards in your deck. You need to have at least 13 units in a deck. And your deck cannot exceed 166 provisions. So really quick, long story short, there used to be a standard set with how many gold cards you could have and things like that. But now everything's a provision cost. So a card will have a provision cost associated to it. So for instance, let's look at Caretaker, which is a relic with a 7 power card, but with a 9 provision. So if I put this card in my hand, even though it is gold, in my deck, even though it is gold, it will cost 9 provision to maintain in my deck. So the more higher-end cards you play, of course, the higher provision cost those will have, which, of course, will fill up your provision allocation quicker. So you kind of have to weigh, what cards to play. Now, if you play Magic the Gathering, you know all about mana curve. Do you want to have cards that start to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all the way up? You don't want to have cards that play higher right away. Now, again, doesn't pertain so much to Gwent because there is no mana, so you don't have to, there's no economy essentially when it comes to Gwent besides the Syndicate group, which has coins, which is about profit and tribute, but that is for a different podcast. You don't have to worry about playing lands or tapping or anything like that. You can play a card the moment it is in your hand. So anyways, you're going to want to have some sort of curve to it because the provisional cost will cause your deck to not be able to play correctly if you do that. Now, there's all different sorts of abilities that cards will have as well. For instance, there are deploy abilities. Now, deploy abilities happen when you put the card into the battlefield. When it is played, it is called a deploy. So there will be an effect that card will give. Some of the effects can be bleeding. Bleeding is essentially a ticker that is applied to the opponent's card. So let's say they have a 7 power card and I put bleeding on them for 2 turns. So when they are finished with their turn and they pass on to me, that card will become a 6. And then their following turn, that card will become a 5. And that would be a bleed for 2 turns. There's also Thrive, which essentially means if you play a card with a higher power cost, it will increase the card that has Thrive. So for instance, Andrega Larva is a Thrive card. It is a 1 power card with 2 armor with a 5 provisional cost. When you put it into play, it has the deploy skill of summoning a base copy of the unit. So it is a 1 power 2 armor card that once I play spawns and it's another one. So it essentially becomes a 2 strength 4 armor card. Now if I play, let's say, Noonwraith, which is a 6 power card, those larvas will become 2 power cards. So you want to kind of think of a curve when you're thinking of creating a Thrive deck. So if you have a 1, you play a 6, it turns it into a 2. You would want to play 2s, 3s, 4s, and 5s before you would play 7s to correctly curve your Thrive cards. So there are a lot of different abilities. There's consuming allied units, which essentially, of course, means if I'm a 4 card and I consume a 3, my 4 card becomes a 7, and the 3 is now removed from the battlefield. There is dominance, which essentially means that the ability will be triggered if you maintain the highest power card on the board. So let's say my opponent has a 4 level card on the board as their highest power card, and I have a 7 power card. If I play a Bargest, which says that it will order dominance, which essentially means I can play a ability on the card when it is one turn after I played it. Dominance, which essentially means that I have the highest power, so that will only trigger that. So a card can have an order, and usually when that card is placed on the battlefield, you cannot play the order until the following turn. So think of it as summoning sickness. Again, if you, I'm going to kind of visit Magic the Gathering a lot, but it's essentially a summoning sickness. Now, you can get over summoning sickness if you have an ability that allows zeal, or you have a leader ability that has zeal. Now, zeal essentially allows you to override that summoning sickness and be able to play an order right away. And there will be stipulations on when you can play an order. So, for instance, Burgess, you consume an allied unit, and then you consume another allied unit on order as long as you have dominance. So that allows you to essentially use the ability twice, which in some decks is incredibly important. Yes, yeah, so then, of course, you have spawn. Now, spawning is essentially creating a copy of a card. So it's a little bit different than, so let's say we spawn a one power based copy of a unit from your hand into a row. Let's say if we're spawning a cave troll, it won't come in at its full ability. It'll come in at a one power. So you lose the deploy ability on a spawn. Now this can kind of get convoluted, confusing. This is more just to kind of give you a crash course through some of the different things there are. So there's also a death wish. Death wish is once the card is destroyed by your opponent, it will trigger an ability. Now those death wishes can be great, they can be bad, but that goes into the meta and how you play the cards. Yes, so lots of stuff. You have a melee and a ranged row, so cards will also have abilities that will say, if you play me on this row, I'll do this. If you play me on this row, I'll do this. So, for instance, Azreal, a very popular card that's played in multiple decks. If you deploy it on the melee row, which is your front row, it will consume a unit from your opponent's graveyard. So it's a one power card. If I play it on the front row, I can consume a card in my opponent's graveyard that might have been played on an earlier round. So let's say he played Jurgen, which is a 13 power card. Right, yeah, sorry, 13 power card, a prior turn. If I consume that card with Ozzy, then that card becomes a 13 power card, or an additional 13 power. So if I play it on the range row, which is the back row, I will consume a unit from my graveyard. So if I played a very high powered card in the first round or the second round, I want to get a good one up on my opponent in the third round, I can play Ozzy and, you know, get a 14 power card. So, again, there's a lot of different abilities in the game. You will learn as you play. This is more of kind of giving you an idea of the different ones there are. So, there's also Purify, which, so let's say somebody puts a poison on you, which is another ability. So, if I play a card that has a poison, it leaves a poison mark on the card I'm playing against. If I have two poison counters on a card, it is destroyed. So there's not really a targeting system so much with Gwent. It's more of cards that have the ability that say to target. So damage unit by two when you play this card, put a poison counter on it, put a lock on it, things like that. Lock essentially removes the ability from the card. So let's say I have a card that says every allied turn add a plus one counter to a hand in my card in my hand. If I play a card that deploys with a lock a specific unit, I can lock that ability. So every turn he does not receive a plus one to one of the cards in his hand. So that would be extremely important to get rid of early on in the game. Later in the game, it might be a wasted ability because maybe you've only required one or two power. But early in the game, that could be a 6-7 point play, which a bronze card getting 7, 8, 9 to value, that's a big swing on the game. So you have to kind of pay attention to those types of things. I'm probably missing some other characteristics, like doomed, which essentially just means that once the card is removed from the battlefield, it is gone. Of course, there's banish, which is the same thing. If you banish a unit from play, it does not go back in the graveyard, because there are many cards that allow you to resurrect from the graveyard or pick from your graveyard, and those can come very important if somebody plays a first round pick. So let's say, for instance, a lockdown deck, which I play Masquerade Ball, which is a scenario card, which has a prologue, a chapter one, and a chapter two, and I progress the scenario by playing a card that is an aristocrat. So each card kind of has what they are. They could be an aristocrat, they can be a mage, they can be a human soldier, all different sorts of things they can be. So as I progress, it spawns cards into the game. So once round one is over, if I've played the Masquerade Ball, it goes into my graveyard. Now, Masquerade Ball is a high provisional card. It's a very powerful card if played correctly. I want to bring that back into my deck somehow. So I can actually play a card called Asir Var Enahid, which allows me to shuffle a card back into my graveyard, or shuffle an opponent's card back into their graveyard. So if I want to be able to play the Masquerade Ball again, I have to play that card. Now, if my opponent banishes that card, I cannot play it from my graveyard. So that can cause all sorts of issues with how I will play round two and three. So, kind of like chess, you have to think about your next moves and your next rounds. You can't just rely on, I'm just going to throw cards out on the whim and hopefully they will all work out. That cannot do that. So yes, so pay attention to that. So like I said, there are tons of different abilities in the game that you will learn as you go. I recommend going through deck builders. You can actually go to Gwent decks, and you can actually import the decks into your Gwent library. So let's say, like me, you're like, oh, I like this deck, I like how it works, I want to play something else, I really don't know how to build a deck. You can actually import decks into your library from the website, and it will actually tell you how much scrap it will cost to make that deck, which we'll talk about here in a second. So yes, there's many tools out there. So we also have the journey story, which every week there will be certain tasks you have to complete. So for instance, you know, boost units 20 times. If I complete that, I get 20 half crowns. Those will add to your leveling in terms of your progression to unlock stuff. You have your quests, which are on daily, which will things play 20 artifact cards, which, for instance, will give me one key, or win 5 matches as the Skilliage faction, which will get me 60 ore, which is used to arena pass or to... what else is ore used for? I don't remember. Anyways, so you have the reward book, which was also added. So you'll have different factions that have reward books, expansions that have reward books as you play. So let's say I have 2 keys, and I'm going to go to one of the monster reward book sides. So my next level of progression would be 3 keys to unlock 200 ore, which, again, as you play the game, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. There's no visuals here. And then of course you have a leveling system, which will tell you the highest level you have achieved in the game. There are different prestiges. Those prestiges will unlock more stuff as you play. There's a MMR, which is your matchmake rating, which increases as you win, decreases as you lose. And then of course there is your current ranked. So as you play ranked matches, you will go up. Once you hit past 0, you will hit pro player status or pro rank status. I cannot speak to that because I am nowhere near there. Current rank is 14. And of course we'll show you things like the amount of cards you have for each faction, amount of GGs you've done. There's a lot of cool stuff. Showcase contracts, trinkets, you know, you have to play the game to kind of come from. So we'll get to the currency real quick. There are keys, which will unlock things in your reward book. There is ore, which will which will open kegs. Kegs have cards in them. You can buy set kegs, which will have cards from certain expansions. You can buy faction kegs, which will have, so let's say you play monster a lot or you want to unlock monster cards more than anything, you can open monster kegs. And then there's ultimate premium kegs, which will include a lot of premium stuff. Those can only be purchased with dollars, real American currency. All the other kegs can be purchased with American currency, probably other currency as well. I don't know why I'm saying American. Or can be purchased with ore. Then, of course, you have scrap. Scrap will build cards in the game. Of course, the scrap will go up with the rarity of the card and what it does. And then you have meteorite powder, which essentially is used to make cards look cooler. And you can purchase that powder. So, for instance, 400 powder at the current release will unlock one premium card, which is 349 in currency. You can unlock cards such as playing a whole bunch or by paying money. And of course, there's different shops, things, you starter packs and monster faction packs you can buy and stuff like that. And then you can also acquire kegs. And like I said, those kegs will open 5 cards. You can purchase those or acquire those by playing the game. So lots of information. And of course, you have the main shop, which is just meant to spend money. If you don't want to have to play the game to do it, or you want to have really cool, fancy-ass looking cards and not have to work for it, all power to you. It's just cosmetic. It's not going to make you a better player. And ornaments will be added as you play, and of course, notes for future patches and things like that. Yeah, so I think that kind of covers the majority of the basics to the game. You're not really going to understand all the things we talked about until you actually open the game and start to play it. I would tell you to, if possible, find a streamer to follow. You can refer to like Team Leviathan Game, which I talked about, which was given to me on the earlier side, and that has helped me a lot. There's a whole bunch of YouTubers that will talk about decks, how to play certain decks. I would recommend anything Spyro. He will talk about basic things that people do wrong, things to look for as you play. But like anything, to really understand the game and get better, you have to play it. You are going to lose. You're going to lose a lot, but you have to play good people to get good. If you continue to play the bottom of your division, no one's ever really going to know how good you are. So do not be afraid to lose. It is going to happen. So yes, that is essentially the majority of episode 1, a extremely quick crash course, actually a 40-minute crash course to Gwent as I'm speaking. Now, I probably left a lot of stuff out. Might have told you a couple incorrect things or maybe gave you the wrong advice. But again, I'm a new player just as much as you are. And I hope that makes the game a little bit more approachable for you and easier to understand. Episode 2 will probably go a little bit more into certain decks, certain cards. My dream of this podcast and of this channel is to create a really good community. Hopefully to bring some followers on, people who subscribe to the channel, and maybe even some pro players. So anyways, guys, thanks again for listening. Like I said, Twitch channel, DarkTemp66. We'll be starting a YouTube channel as well. You can also follow me on Twitter. That is at TrapStarChop. Yes, at TrapStarChop. I will talk more than just Gwent, like Atlanta Braves baseball, alcohol. Trying to do as little politics as possible, but that's been really hard the last 4 years. But guys, thank you so much for joining. We hope you support the channel. We hope you join the channel and become a part of this, because again, this channel is not about me, it's about the people who get involved. So thanks again, guys. Have a great night, and I hope next time you stay a while and listen.